Welcome to the panel, My Financial Advisor is an Algorithm. Thanks for coming. My name is Silke Lane, and I'm the Director of User Experience for MediaMan. We are a digital agency that was founded by Stefan, who's on the panel with me today, and Armin, who's in the audience today. They founded it in Germany in 1996, and a few years ago, Armin opened an office in Boston, and thankfully he lets me work remotely from Missoula, Montana. Also on the panel with us is Gib, the CEO of Peridrome, and he's going to talk a little bit about a project that we are working on together. Do you want to say a few words about yourself?
Sure. As Silke said, I'm CEO of Peridrome Corporation, and my background in the securities business has been everything from retail brokerage, self-directed brokerage, and online trading to retail investment management. And at Peridrome, we have developed some solutions for optimizing the handling of client accounts in a wealth management back office. And today we're going to talk a little bit about some new ideas for optimizing the interactions between financial advisors and their clients.
Okay, so what are we going to talk about today? We will talk about three different models for digitally enhanced financial advisory. We at MediaMan have a long history, long list of clients from the financial industry. So we know that it's a constant challenge to convince bank managers that it is time to try something new and then again and then again and then again. But also to convince customers that what we are putting in front of them is safe, and that it is easy to use, and that is also very valuable to them. So today we want to talk about trying something new in the specific field of financial advisory that could change or enhance or maybe even replace that relationship between the investor and the financial advisor. And the three models that we're going to talk about have very different levels of involvement from algorithms, but also the personal financial advisor. Stefan and Gib will show you some things that are possible today. And then I will share with you my vision of the future where I finally won't have to understand investment vehicles anymore. But before we talk about these models, I want to take a quick look at investors and their attitudes towards the financial industry in general, but also financial advisors in particular. And I think that this picture sums it up pretty well. There is a lot of distrust that has to do with the financial crisis. When you see that your investments plunge and that your retirement savings are going down the drain, then it's hard to still trust the financial industry. Also, we hear a lot about fraud, and there's talk about so many different investment vehicles that at least I have no understanding what they are. It just seems so complicated. And so the financial industry is not liked a lot, and advisors are a little stuck in being guilty by association. On the other hand, research says that Americans that already have a personal relationship with a financial advisor, they actually trust them a lot. So we took a little closer look at that trust. These are some numbers from the Financial Harmony study by the Million Dollar Roundtable. And they asked people, whom do you trust when it comes to financial matters and decisions? And the one person that people actually trusted most was themselves. And they even trusted their family and their friends more than the financial professionals. So then the study asked financial advisors, whom do you think your clients trust when it comes to financial matters? And you can see that there is a gap between how clients feel and what advisors think. Advisors thought that people would trust themselves less and that they would trust the advisor more. And the study also showed that this gap is even larger in younger generations. So the millennials are generally less trusting of financial professionals and instead place their trust more in family and friends. So we don't really trust them, and we are used to doing things on our own, online. We book travel, we buy insurance, we look up our symptoms, or even take pictures of our symptoms with our phone rather than going to the doctor's office. So why do we still need financial advisors? And the reason is that it is a very complex business. The cycle is very complex and it has a lot of tasks. And I asked Gip to talk a little bit more about that.
Sure. Well, first of all, a quick question. How many in the audience today are in the financial services industry, financial advice industry? Okay, fair number of you. I think this picture on the screen is probably quite familiar to you. It's something that's called the consultative process or the advisory process, and it generally begins with client profiling to determine kind of the basics of the client's life and the risk tolerance, et cetera, and then goes to developing a plan based around the client's life goals, and from there an appropriate asset allocation and the construction of a portfolio to support those goals and an implementation of that plan as well, and ongoing monitoring of its progress. And around the edges of this, you can see all of the various tasks and the technologies that are deployed today in the financial services industry to support all of these tasks. So it's actually really quite complex, and one that's now highly automated, but not necessarily automated in a particularly seamless way with respect to the client. We have up on the stage here some other
spooky
presentation that's being played to us as we're talking. So
if we sound
a little distracted, we're listening to some other thing that's very interesting but still kind of distracting.
Okay. So financial consultancy is complex. It's not just a matter of dragging and dropping the right equities and then we're done. And it is a very serious matter. Your quality of life and retirement may depend on the investment decisions that you make today. But sophisticated financial planning tools are often very hard to use. The asset allocation is difficult to understand. The costs and benefits of various investment products are not transparent. Is that actually coming out of my... I don't know what's coming from, I'm sorry. Maintaining a financial plan through all your life changes and market fluctuation, that takes a lot of commitment and discipline, which personally I don't have. So you may want to talk to someone who understands investing and who understands you and your vision and who also shares your love for technology. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Stefan.
Yes, thanks, Silke. We're starting our look into the future of financial advisory with a model that all of you are familiar with, advisory face-to-face. So what I'm going to show you within the next 10 minutes or so is a further development of that model. It's both digitally and physically enhanced. So I'm saying my financial advisor has an algorithm. Let me talk a little bit about what's the underlying assumption. I don't think the all-knowing algorithm will be the solution for all of us. There is research that shows that even among digital natives, 50%, around about 50%, clearly prefer a personal conversation to prefer a personal conversation face-to-face. That's because such attitudes have to do with the values that we are educated with, and these values are independent from technical possibilities. The second reason has to do with a problem called financial procrastination. Sure, I know there are many do-it-yourself planning tools around, but even to me, I still tend to procrastinate my personal financial planning, and there are lots of Americans and other people in other countries that are feeling the same. That's not a question of how good or bad the interface is of such tools. It's just too easy to get distracted online or clicking quit when questions become difficult. So that's why I'm saying I need help. That's why I like to make an appointment with an advisor And he helps me to tackle the task. To say it with a picture, I want to enter the car and name the destination, but I don't want to drive the car myself. I need a driver. What we did, we did research how a digital room for better financial advisory could look and feel like. There were two partners working with us in this research project. There were industrial designers from the University of Applied Sciences in Darmstadt, Germany. And on the bank side, we were supported by UniCredit Group, an Italian-German bank. Our goal was to provide a place which is different to traditional advisory situations. Why is this important? I think all industries have to connect somehow with digital natives. They expect more than some Excel sheets and that stuff. And as Silke said, the financial industry in particular has to regain trust. And to us, and it showed in this project, nothing compares to face-to-face advisory when trust is crucial. We asked ourselves three main questions. First, what makes an attractive room? There's the room itself, the architecture, the materials, the interior design, and so on. What we wanted is to provide a sensual experience that supports certain emotions like confidence, privacy, feeling sure and safe, and sure the room should make a little bit curious about what's happening in there. Our advisory room should be far more attractive than a conventional office. And you see the model over there, and I might explain it later to you if you have questions to it. What we did was classifying many possible room scenarios to find a suitable design. Scenarios like using a cover to shield it or a bubble, and we ended up with a concept we called bracket. I just show you some sketches our partners in Darmstadt did to elaborate that concept. Another few. And one important requirement was to be able to integrate some technical devices we had in mind. We built an architectural model, as I said, which you can see here. It has some pretty fancy solutions for a serial production, and you can use these standardized modules to adapt it to your needs and to different sizes and requirements. And we also built a setup and prototype room at our agency location in Mainz. And that's how this room looks like. You will see this later in action in a video clip we did. The next question we asked was, what kind of digital devices do we need? How can we support the process of financial advisory face-to-face? What is attractive to digital natives? We know that size matters, and luckily 2010, 2011, some very attractive devices from that point of view came on the market. That's a central input device in our advisory room. It's a multi-touch table built by Samsung. It's on the market right now, and it's like a Gaian smartphone. You might have seen it already. It detects very precisely up to 50 simultaneous touches simultaneously. You can also use it to scan documents or use tangibles like knobs or other physical objects you place on the surface. And it's clearly an advantage to speak to all senses within the advisory process. And that's why we also included a piece of paper within our sample advisory process. You could also do things like putting the ID card on the table or even mobile phones to interact with this table. The other device we use is a large horizontal video wall. Actually, the industrial designers we worked with would love to have the wall itself being the screen. And I think we don't have to wait too long for this vision to become reality. For our prototype, we just used three flat screens in a row, which worked out pretty well. So you get a long horizontal space, which is really good in providing an overview for contents like the personal financial history and the future over 20 or so years. You need such a space. Or you can display the agenda for the ongoing advisory. The wall is controlled by the advisor only, so we have clear roles in that situation, with the multi-touch table being the playground for the client. We're using a Kinect sensor, you might know this also, that allows us to control the video wall with gestures or voice commands. That's pretty impressive and leads to our third question. What makes up a natural interface, an interface that feels naturally? Of course, it shouldn't be a barrier between the advisor and the client. That's usually the case when the advisor uses a keyboard to fill in a standard form or an Excel sheet. I'm sure you all know requirements for a touchscreen interface, big buttons, super clear options, and all that stuff. And we wanted to go one step further. We wanted to create an interface that's inspiring to the client and fun to use. And we ended up with one of the purest forms, the circle. Actually, we combined two circles you see here in these different shades of gray. The inner circle acts as an information area. It tells you what did I select, which steps have been finalized. And the outer circle acts as navigation area with touchable icons. Here are some examples representing the five steps within our profiling process. For the interaction design, we combined multiple circles. So if you touch one of the icons, the options pop out organically, and that shape becomes something like a multifunctional biomorph interface element. You will see this animated in a minute in this video clip. And I just want to say that this circle also forms our agenda. And here's how this looks like. Each circle represents one step in our advisory process. It's activated with a swipe gesture, just like this. And that's where the Kinect sensor comes into play. And with another gesture, the advisor moves it from the wall onto the table. And there the interaction with the client starts. So let's have just a quick step through one or two steps. So if the client taps on the family icon, a new bubble appears surrounded by several options, single, partnership, legal partnership, married. So let's say I'm married. And the bubble displays the selected option. Now let's look at the children. A new bubble pops up, one children, no children, one child, two children, three, more than three. Let's say our client has two children. And again, the selected option is reflected within that area. And the whole profiling process is done that way. It's visual, fast, and intuitive. So I want to show it in a short video clip how...
Can we have some sound?
So that's the short questionnaire I mentioned. Put it on the table and the table scans it. And then you can wipe it up. That's the gesture to move it onto the table. Type in something, a keyboard pops up. Move this. Move other things. Take the next step. There's a different interface with two. to see what are the wishes of the client. Also traditional elements like this. And here's the timeline displaying all the contracts the customer has and his wishes. Finally, some product cards appear where you can see all the detailed information. So that's it. Our vision of what face-to-face advisory can look like already today. We used only devices that already exist on the market. I like to say that technically the code fully separates the visual look and feel from the objects and their behavior, so companies can easily adapt the interface to their corporate design and, of course, to their advisory process. I think we have time for questions at the end of the presentation, so I'm handing over to Gip to introduce you to our vision of networked financial advisory.
Okay, thank you, Stefan. Well, as I mentioned before, I'm Gip Vacconi, CEO of Paradrome, and I'm going to talk about some new ideas that we're developing with respect to not the traditional financial advisory dialogue face-to-face between a client and an advisor, but an online dialogue where clients, financial advisors, and perhaps other trusted parties work together. First, just an observation. Self-directed trading, personal banking, insurance, mortgage origination have all made the transition to online delivery over the last 20 years. But those financial services tend to be transactional in nature. And the advice process that we discussed earlier is not. It's really collaborative in nature. It's something that evolves and iterates over the course of a relationship between a client and a financial advisor. And so that important difference presents an opportunity using social media to serve the needs of clients and financial advisors more effectively. For many investors today, structuring their investment experience around the bandwidth and the availability of the financial advisor doesn't work anymore. A recent study found that 39% of affluent investors under 50 spend more than 8 hours per month managing their financial affairs. And 28% consult with more than one financial advisor. 38% interact with their financial advisor more than once a week. And so that sort of annual cycle of client profiling, goal setting, portfolio rebalancing is really just not keeping up with the pace of how people manage their finances today. These are investors who want the benefit of the financial expertise that advisors provide, but they want to be in the driver's seat, to use Stefan's example. They want the ability to draw on their network of friends and their family for information and advice as well. More than half of those affluent investors under 50 have, at some point or another, posted a question about financial advice to Facebook or to another social media channel, and more than a third have written an entry on a financial blog or a message board. So this is something that everybody's quite familiar with at this stage. With households accumulating their retirement savings in 401k plans, college savings in 529 plans, individual taxable investment accounts and other non-taxable investment accounts, providing a unified view of the client's financial picture online is going to have increasing value to clients. Now, obviously, we're aware of many places today where you can look at sort of an aggregated view of your investments, you know, Mint, WIC Invest, many other similar sites. But those sites are typically focused on the value of your investments, current performance, and analytics that explain whether you've chosen the right investment products versus, you know, perhaps others that are of lower cost or better performance. they don't focus on is a financial plan. And the financial plan has historically been the thing that's developed between the client and the advisor. And the advisor, in a way, sort of ends up being the plan owner. But that's not really, it's not really effective, as effective today as it was perhaps in years past, not only because of the rise of online media, but also because investors can no longer rely on many of the former certainties of long-term financial planning. You know, the idea of having sort of a continual increase in equity in one's home or a pension plan that's funded by one's employer, or even the idea that the S&P 500 will continue to go up over the long term, are just not sure anymore. So now investors need to be able to be actively engaged with their own financial plans and maintain them as their lives change, new financial events take place, and there's new market conditions to absorb. The good news is the client-centric approach to financial advice and collaboration lends itself to interaction with friends, family members, and financial professionals, and they all help the client to better understand and guide his investment choices. So, based around the idea of client ownership and maintenance of a financial plan, I have a couple slides here that sort of illustrate how that process can work online in a social media situation. So here's our hypothetical investor, Pete Smith, who's just started his first job with a firm that offers a 401k plan, might, for instance, call on his brother to have a look at that, the way he's structured his plan, and his brother might go ahead and make some investment recommendations that render in a way that I didn't expect here on this screen. So hopefully it was clear what that was. Might even further go ahead and recommend that his brother begin thinking about his children's college education as well. Now, that's not something he can get done at work. It's not obviously it's not a type of a service that his employer offers, so his brother refers him to a financial advisor. He's already got a plan together, so by the time he engages a financial advisor, the advisor is able to very quickly assess what his income and what his expenses are, what some of his major life events that he's planned for might be, and make some recommendations about how to invest his money, which, again, don't look exactly the way we expected to on the PowerPoint slide.
Looks great here.
And then from here, be able to link to, offer him links to the sites where he's able to continue to go ahead and fulfill those types of new account opens. So this process has some obvious benefits for the investor in that by taking ownership of his plan and using that as his dashboard, he's able to better keep his plan current, respond to events in the market and the like. But it also has some very important benefits for advisors. Advisors tend to only see a small piece of their client's total investment picture, even though they don't always believe they're seeing a small piece of the client's investment picture. A recent study by Cerulli showed that of financial advisors and clients showed that the advisors believed only 20% of their clients had outside accounts. Clients, on the other hand, 75% of the clients had outside accounts. The advisors don't know about those accounts because they have no transparency and they're not providing advice. But through client maintenance and ownership of their plans through sharing in a social platform, the advisors have that type of insight and can actually react proactively to when events in the client's life change. Just give you a little personal anecdote here. Several years ago, I went to meet with my financial advisor. She had been sending me emails for probably a period of 18 months or a couple of years, saying it's really time for you to come in and have a checkup and look at your plan and we'll look at your investments. And I had put them off because I was quite busy, had other things to do that were more pressing. Finally decided I had an afternoon free and I made an appointment. Sat down with her and the first thing she said was, "So, have you determined where exactly in Italy you're going to be retiring to?" I said, what could you be talking about? She said, "Well, last time you were in here, you told me you were going to retire to Italy." I said, "Well, I guess that's right, but that was 3 years ago." You know, I remember I just come back from a vacation, and I thought it was a nice place to visit, and it'd be really great to. But you know, she was very pleased having remembered that from 3 years ago, but it no longer had anything to do with what my real plans for my retirement are. The idea that financial advisors now have a way to have a continuing insight into what's going on in their clients' lives will become very important to their ability to add value to those client relationships in the future. And that's one of the most significant benefits that that social finance can bring to advice. So it's a response not just to new technology and to modes of communications, but also the conditions under which people today are planning for important goals like retirement, and college education, and home ownership. And it represents a platform for investors to become better educated and equipped to make an active sort of role for themselves in managing their finances, as well as a way for clients and advisors alike to optimize their reactions and their relationship with each other. So we're very excited about looking at opportunities for the types of tools that heretofore have been the province of investment advisors being migrated to social platforms where clients aggregate their financial information, build and manage their own investment plans, and draw on the expertise of advisors, financial professionals, trusted friends, to help guide their investment decisions. So that's my part of the presentation. And so for all those reasons, we say that our my algorithm has financial advisors. So now I'll turn it back over to Silke.
All right. The algorithm, finally. There he is. So I want to ask you, how many of you spend more than 1 hour per week on Facebook or Twitter or such things? Okay. And then how many of you spend more than an hour per week maintaining your 401k or other retirement savings and investments? A few. So Gib here says that it is a matter of designing the right platform of engaging customers, and that if investing were only fun enough and easy enough, that more people would do it, and that we would all cut a chunk out of our Facebook time to spend it on that financial social network. So I mentioned that my title is Director of User Experience, so I do believe that we can build a platform like that, one that is very rewarding and that will make people feel great about using it and reaching their life goals at the same time. But I also think that for many people that is still too much, and that the rewards may be too far in the future. Did I go one too fast? No. There are many theories and TED Talks out there about why people make choices or why they choose not to choose. And a lot of that has to do with procrastination or inertia. And Stefan also talked about that before a little bit. And people are also overwhelmed. And for me, in the case of investing money, it's both. I want to plan for my financial future. I just don't want to do it right now. And sometimes I do click through on that email that Mint sends me telling me that I should look into IRAs. But then I get overwhelmed by all the choices, so I give up and go back to clicking the Twitter refresh button. So how can an algorithm help me? And I think it can help me by being ubiquitous, but also unobtrusive at the same time. So we heard that financial advice is already based on a lot of data that the client gives the advisor, and market data, obviously. The advisor that talks to the client in that sophisticated room of advisory has an algorithm to come up with product recommendations. The investment network uses algorithms to recommend an asset allocation. And then advisors use their own models or algorithms to suggest a product selection. It is already based on data, and plus me personally, I don't want to learn about investing. I don't want to take the time to manage my plan. I want an automatic financial advisor. So why do I still need a person to interact with? Why do I still need to be bothered by all these choices if in the end I'm expected to rely on someone else's recommendation anyway? And the obvious answer to that is because investing is very individual and personal. Because the advisor needs to know me and my life and my goals and my finances, but so many algorithms already know all these things about me. I don't know if you read that bit in the New York Times the other day where Target knew that a customer was pregnant probably before her father did. And that happened long before she started buying diapers or baby stuff. Target knows that because they have a very smart algorithm. And that algorithm can identify the pregnancy trimester based on the woman buying unscented lotion or vitamin supplements. Algorithms know what books I should read, what films I will like, what dress I should wear to the South by Southwest panel. Mint alerts me that we have extraordinarily high travel charges on the credit card long before my husband was planning to tell me that he planned this trip for our anniversary. So if all this data is already flying around and being analyzed and algorithmatized, then why can't that be the basis for my profile, for my financial algovisor? The algovisor can know that I'm 40 years old, I'm married, I'm German, I have a dog but no children. The algorithms know what car I drive and how old that car is, and maybe that I want to buy a new car pretty soon. They know that what my job is and probably how much I make and where my career might be headed. They know that I live in Montana and that I own a house. They know that I like to donate to eco-related charities, so I probably don't want to invest in big oil companies. They know I like to travel and how much money I spend on that. And, you know, if Mint even knows my net worth and all my current investments. And I'm aware that all this information is spread out and that many people would have a lot of privacy concerns. But I have to say, I want this convergence of all this data that is already out there about me, that all these different algorithms know. And I think, to me, it would be very fine if that could converge, because it's going to serve my financial plan, right? And the algovisor doesn't just know about me. It also knows everything there is about investing and about all the markets. He follows all the developments in all global markets. He knows about tax laws and bailouts. And he knows all of the available products that are out there, which I think no person financial advisor can say that they do. And hopefully it also knows when to react and when to stay calm, because it doesn't have any emotions. So it won't panic, and then I won't panic either, hopefully. And I also thought about whether there will even be an interface between me and my algovisor. And I think that the algovisor should use my interface, whatever that may be in a few years when this hopefully will be possible. Today, maybe he would send me a text message when he notices that I canceled my trip to Australia, for which he had set aside some funds. And so he tells me what he would like to do with these funds, and I can confirm that with a click or a swipe or a text message reply. And then maybe he will ask me whether I have time right now to review those proposed purchases. And maybe I'm sitting at the airport in Seattle waiting for my flight back from Austin, and Stefan would like me to do the QA for the new Media Man website, but I don't feel like it. And maybe I will just say, sure, tell me more about these investments. And then I can look at it and learn more about it, but I don't have to. If I'm at home and my dog needs to go for a walk, I can just say, go ahead. I don't want to review in detail. Just go ahead and make these purchases. So my algovisor probably has some kind of interface between me and him, but I think that our conversations should be natural. I don't want to open an app or a website every day. And maybe the algorithm knows that, yeah, usually on Sunday she does because she has time, and then maybe it will send me an email, but during the week it will send me a text message. So I think it should be all very natural and not take as little effort from me as possible. One more thing that I wanted to say is that I'm aware that this algorithm has lots of algorithms, and that there will have to be a lot of very smart humans behind these algorithms that will write them, because unless the singularity is here, these algorithms don't write themselves yet. They are written by humans who know a lot about investing. And I hope that my algorithm will be written by the smartest of them all. So before we open it up for questions, I would like to come back to Stefan and Gib. And I would like to hear from you guys what the roles of interface and algorithm and humans are in your models.
Yes, obviously in our model, the role of the interface is two-sided. We have this physical interface, so sitting in a dedicated room and experiencing this atmosphere, this feeling of privacy and not being distracted by anything else, being focused on that topic. And second, of course, there's the digital interface. I showed you with the multi-touch table and this large horizontal video wall. And that's connecting me with my lifestyle. I like these devices. I like new experiences on that. On that kind of digital lifestyle, sure, it gives me a good feeling and a good overview over that complex matter I really hardly understand, and it all feels simple and fluent, and there's, of course, the human that guides me through this process, and he takes care of the follow-up, so I feel comfortable and safe.
And so with that network, there will be no direct human interaction, but I think what we're trying to achieve is a lot of interaction, per se. That's not personal, but there's still a lot of interaction between humans still.
Right. One of the important components of the interface is to not only allow clients and advisors to share dialogue between themselves, but actually allow them to collaborate and work on the same plan together. So the interface facilitates capturing, you know, all of the client information that typically is part of the advice process, but is presented in a way that is very graphical, animated, easy for the client to understand and use, and then later maintain. Behind there are the same type of algorithms that exist in financial planning software today, projecting out expected rates of return, the impact on client investments, being able to assess risk and propose an appropriate asset allocation. But where those are disparate applications, and perhaps in some ways in the financial advisor's world today, they're being brought together in a relatively seamless way for collaboration by all parties in the network. The other thing I should mention that's very important with respect to the algorithms and the logic that underlies the social finance network is that there's obviously quite a bit of sensitivity around the information that's being shared among participants in the social finance network. So there's a very, very granular level of control and security around what you choose to share with whom, your financial advisors, your family members, and the like. There's no less sensitivity on the financial advisor's part as well. He may be interested in providing advice and feedback directly to his clients, but not necessarily for view by the client's entire circle of friends. And so there is a relatively sophisticated set of rules and interfaces to enable clients and advisors to allow access or deny access to the fruits of their collaboration.
All right. Okay, so if you guys have any questions, they asked me to ask you to go up to that microphone. I also want to say that you can download the slides from this URL. You need to give us a few more days. We need to... These slides are very fresh out of the oven. So once we get back from Austin, we will make them available to you. And if you want to discuss this a little further on Twitter also, we'd be very happy about that. You need to go to the microphone. Yeah.
Thanks again. This is really very interesting. But as an advisor, there's a certain level of accountability. So a couple of questions that I have for you are, what are you doing about FINRA? Mm-hmm. Because we are regulated so heavily in how we can interact with our clients. If you send me a text message asking me about something, a particular fund that you want to invest in, I cannot respond to that. We have to talk. Mm-hmm. And it has to be documented that I wrote down why I made that recommendation or why I gave you that advice. So it sounds great, and we all operate in this world, but this world is so far beyond how we're regulated for communication. So what do you do about FINRA and those regulations, and also who's accountable? Is this advisor accountable for the recommendations that they make on that little screen you had? Oh, I'm moving these funds. And why? Who's accountable? Because in an advisor relationship, I am, but I have to document why.
Yeah, that is a very good question, and we discussed that too. As I mentioned briefly, is that I am aware that there are these regulations, and I know that right now my vision of the AlgoVisor is not possible. It's just not. But that doesn't mean that I don't think that it should be possible in the future, because I think I'm German, and all this retirement planning is so very different there. But here, when I see that people have to rely on investing for their retirement, then it needs to be easier for people. And maybe you want to talk a little bit about regulations and
so
that network.
We made actually kind of a conscious decision for no particular reason coming here, not that we weren't going to focus on the regulatory aspect, but I will say a couple words, you know, because you laid out the issues very, very well. First of all, I guess I would make the observation that the discussion now in the regulatory context about use of social media today is not a whole lot different than the conversation about email was about 16 years ago. There were a lot of new regulations that came out. You know, one of the wonderful things about government regulators and even non-government regulators like FINRA is that they can come out with new rules without regard to what it takes from a technology standpoint to support them. And it's just terrific, because what that does is create a new opportunity for all sorts of technology entrepreneurs to be able to fill that gap. And, you know, 16 years ago, it was the whole idea of all email being retained as firm books and records related to the business as such, I think, is the way it's worded. And there was a huge, you know, opportunity, which was filled, to be able to archive those emails, automate compliance review of those emails, everything else, because there was no way in the world that advisors were not going to use email. I mean, that was just, it's not going to work from a business point of view, so somebody needs to solve it. I don't think things will be all that much different with respect to social media. And I would even say I think the issue is not with FINRA and with the SEC. You know, FINRA's come out with some pretty specific guidelines in 1006 and 1139, and there's SEC regs as well. The real issue is that individual regulated firms interpret those rules differently, and they have differences in internal guidelines. And so there's a period where the industry as a whole sort of has to true up the way that they look at things like social media. Because the overhead for compliance with the FINRA guidelines right now actually is not all that high, but your own internal compliance department may have a different view of what they want you to do that's more strenuous and that has more you know, more of a set of belt and suspenders around it than maybe FINRA requires. So there will be a point in time where the industry as a whole will need to kind of adjust, you know, not so much to the regulation, but adjust and agree on how that regulation needs to be put into practice.
I knew I was going to be happy to have you on the panel.
Yes.
Hi. I work on Mint, so sorry for spoiling your honeymoon with emails. There's something that I don't quite get. Like, this is awesome. I love it. But for the AlgoVisor to work most efficiently, let's say, it needs all this knowledge of available products, right? Mm-hmm. out there, financial products that I can move my money into. But typically, advisors only sell a very limited selection of products. They basically sell their products. Mm-hmm. So how does this work if you want this, like if you wanted to go sit down with an advisor and have that be a connect, right? And he's basically using this amazing show to help sell his products. But if he's only got 10 products that he sells and there's 16,000 in the market, then is that really the best thing for the end user?
Were you talking about the model that I was talking about, or
actually, I'm thinking just in general.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe as an independent service that pulls everything together, like you said, like Singularity, right? But is there an incentive for an advisor to want to participate in this model at all?
In my model,
not at all.
Okay. No. And that's exactly what I want. That's why I would prefer the AlgoVisor to an advisor, because advisors usually don't know all the products. That is why I would prefer a machine that knows them all.
Right.
But I think it's different for Stefan and Gibb's models, because this advisor doesn't want to give the or run a choice of a million products by the client.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It was like kind of a foregone conclusion in my mind that because of regulations, there would have to be some type of human involved.
Yeah.
But perhaps, you know, we're getting to a better place. So, anyway, thank you. Sorry for the confusing question.
Stefan, you indicated that you had developed this model with some financial services clients. Can you tell us a little bit about their implementation, about the acceptance both by their staff of advisors as well as by the end clients?
It's a research project. It hasn't gone into reality at the moment. So we just did this prototype and worked with the bank on. So they advised us on their advisory process, and so this proof of concept will still have to come, That's obviously the next step, so I can't.
Thank you.
So I see a lot of value in the social finance model for the planning portion of the process. Now, given that advisors are so focused on assets under management, I'm curious your thoughts on utilizing social finance for the prospecting portion of the process, as well as the problem of intergenerational asset loss. So, like, you know, a lot of assets are lost when, you know, the wealth is passed from one generation to another. Wondering how social finance can be leveraged to solve that problem.
Yeah, I think that is a particularly compelling case for social finance, because the you know, that next generation to whom is going to the assets are going to be received by, you know, very often gets, I don't want to say left out, but they may not be active participants in that process from the beginning and may actually not know what the intentions of the, what the intentions of the grantors were. And one of the opportunities with the social finance model is to be able to have the family members be able to share a plan together and see what the intentions are with respect to how assets are supposed to be distributed out and how the succeeding generation is going to receive them. I will tell you not to drag you down again with another personal anecdote, but I'm coming off of myself a relatively protracted experience settling in a state, and it's extremely challenging sometimes to know, even if you have a 2 foot high stack of documents, what exactly was intended and how it was supposed to play out. And this is a place where collaboration among the family members in advance it can really make the difference between everybody agreeing and being able to sort of move on happily together or not.
Okay. And how about the prospecting piece?
I think the prospecting piece does. There's clearly a role for prospecting in there because, as an individual, once you develop a plan, let's say, I've laid out a plan for myself. I've shared it with some trusted family members, and I've gotten some feedback. But I don't have the algovisor yet, and I'm not an expert in all aspects of the securities and the types of investment vehicles I may need, and I may not know, and may have no other reference for an advisor who is. So the idea that I can use the network to help locate an advisor with that expertise is very valuable to me, especially valuable. And this gets into another area, and I'll anticipate the next question from a financial advisor, but this gets into another area that's very, very sensitive right now, which is the idea of financial advisor profiles and rankings and information appearing on the internet. Unfortunately, right now, the way that's coming out is it's coming out with various sites making some or all of the FINRA database materials available, and that's actually a very limited value to the client. Seeing the broker's record in FINRA is not going to tell me all that much about whether he's going to be able to help solve the problems that I'm trying to solve. But seeing a more granular and categorized sort of rating of his expertise very well might. So I think this has tremendous opportunity to be a vehicle for brokers to help find new clients and perhaps even expand their practice beyond the area that now they're likely to serve. There's a tendency of brokers to focus in a geographical area for their client base, but that no longer, provided, of course, they have the appropriate registrations, no longer needs to be the case. And if I can tap on the pool of financial expertise nationwide to help address challenges in my financial plan, I want to do it.
Thank you.
My name is Amy McWayne, and my firm is Financial Social Media. We work with financial advisors on turnkey monthly management solutions. And I found that while we have a lot of processes, systems in place, and we do rely on automation, there still is a need to have that personal involvement to see the success with social. And I was wondering what your thoughts are on if, as technology advances, if you can move away from having that personalization and be able to have more and more, essentially 100% algo advisor for connecting with the clients and prospects.
When you say personalization, can you just explain what you mean by personalization?
Instead of just hitting the communities, because all the local networks are different. So reaching out in the local areas, commenting in commenting strategies on other Facebook fan pages, reaching out within the local community to create engagement versus just kind of setting up, algo advisor type situation.
I'm not sure if that's an algo advisor question or the social question. I think there's a lot of focus right now on the marketing dimension of social media for financial advice. I just got done saying I thought it was that it represents some excellent opportunities for advisors to reach new business, but not in the way that necessarily people are thinking about it today or talking about it today, which does go to things like trying to get engaged on a broad scale, on community pages. It's a different model than, let's say, getting engaged around the client's plan. you know, what we're really presenting is the idea about having sort of a shared piece of content. The client ultimately owns it, but is sharing it and driving sort of an engagement with an advisor on a richer level. And it's a different. I think that's a different use of social media than the one you're talking about, which is equally valid. Personally, I don't think that personal communications between clients and advisors are going away. I don't think that's going to happen. But I do believe there are much more effective ways for advisors to be able to use their time than some of the things they have to do today to be able to manage their books of business.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for presenting. This is all really interesting. Have any of you thought about how this would apply to other professional services firms, and maybe just expound on that?
We have definitely thought about it.
Sure. I think all industries that are based on a trustful experience, like medical or real estate, these industry would be good for the kind of process I was suggesting. So
I think that in many ways all complex services are similar in a way. So I can personally see that for other industries totally. Especially healthcare is something that we've talked about a lot. Yeah.
There's an obvious sort of desire to want to parallel this with healthcare. One of the challenges in that is that whereas most of us could actually maintain our own financial plans if we had the desire, it actually is quite possible for us all to do that. To maintain our own patient records, maybe less possible, and especially trying to keep them up to date. Since we're not necessarily clinicians, but I think certainly the idea of using technology to help build trust and better communicate in a one-to-one encounter with a professional is very portable.
Thank you.
All right, we will hang out for a while if there are any more questions, then please come and see us.
Thank you.